You're listening to The Anna Furu Show, episode number 32. Hey guys, today is a very special episode. You get to meet my mentor and friend, Brian Reeves, who is a world-famous life and relationship coach. He shares his view on what real freedom comes from, how to deal with a partner who doesn't support your business, plus how he, as a seven-figure entrepreneur, experiences stress. The wisdom shared in this episode is pretty epic. Let's go to the show. Welcome to The Anna Furu Show. This podcast is designed to empower you to overcome entrepreneurial stress and avoid burnout so that you can build sustainable long-term success and well-being as an entrepreneur. And most importantly, make a positive impact in the world. Hello, Brian, and welcome.
Hi, Anna. It's a pleasure to be here. It's nice to see you again. Thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you so much. This is such a privilege to have you on the show, and I can't wait to share you with my audience, honestly.
Well, I'm honored. I'm proud of you. Great job for starting up this podcast.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You were actually the one who made me do it, I must say.
Wait a second now. I made you do it? No, I don't know if I want that responsibility.
No, sorry. But yeah. But you encouraged me, put it that way.
Okay. I held your head over a microphone and said, "Talk, woman." Oh, that sounds terrible. That's a terrible image. That, no.
Well, not in this day and age. You know? No, I'm just kidding.
That's terrible. Nice to see you, Anna. I'm proud of you. Congratulations. I have a podcast I just started myself like 7 months ago. It's a lot of work. It's no joke.
Yeah. But you are kicking ass, seriously.
Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. My podcast is called Men This Way, mm-hmm. which is for, a lot of women listen to it, but I really created it for men who don't have access, which is most of us, to wise male wisdom, mm-hmm. male elders. It's been fantastic, and it's a lot of work. So congratulations, and I just want to acknowledge you for taking this on. It's no small project.
Thank you so much. And all of you guys listening, I'm going to share all of Brian's links below so you can check him out and follow him on social media and read his blog, which is, how many millions have read your blog?
The number is somewhere between 30 and 40 million at this point.
Holy cow.
Okay. Yeah.
So just so the people who are not familiar with you, you are a relationship and life coach, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, relationship coach and life coach. So I started out really with life coaching, and I transitioned to relationship coaching largely because of the blogs that I was writing about relationships, about me as a man waking up to what the hell I was missing, what I didn't understand that someone like, the things that people should have taught me a long time ago. And as I was writing those blogs, it really started to connect with people. And I was doing life coaching at the time. And so, but because of those blogs, I think people really found themselves in what I was writing, men and women. And the one blog that really kind of launched my couple's work was called Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her.
Yes.
And that one just... wow, that one just seemed to touch so many people around in every culture, every country on the planet has read that blog, except for North Korea, as far as I can tell. And well, I started working with couples in 2014, but in 2015 is when I wrote that blog, and that's when things really took off.
Amazing. Yeah. That blog really went viral, that specific one. But
yeah.
After that, yeah. You're like a big name in the relationship and life coaching industry.
Thank you. Yeah, it definitely, I'm very honored to do this work and to have people from all over the world want to work with me in this capacity. And I think can I ask one of your first questions? Since I think we're getting to it.
Yes.
Why do I do this work?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Anna. I'm totally stealing your thunder. No. I know you said you told me that I don't have to think about anything. You're gonna hold and lead this, and I'm damn it. See, I told you I'm trying. It's impossible. This brain doesn't not think. Oh, it's exhausting.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. Like, I was like, wow,
Yeah.
if you succeed in not thinking, I'm going to be your student eternally.
It's terrible. It's terrible. I can't not do it. So why? Yeah. Why do I do this work? You know, when I was 4 years old, my parents divorced. And I remember the day, or the night really, I remember the night that my dad left. I was four. And I remember he was in his office, his home office, sitting on this bench by the door. And I was sitting with him on the bench. And he was just packing his bags. Like, he was just putting things into a briefcase. And I didn't know what was happening, but I knew he was leaving. And I knew it wasn't good. He was really sad. I was crying. I don't even remember if I was crying, but I was so, so sad. And I remember my mom was downstairs on a rocking chair with my sister, who's 2 years younger than me, who was even more clueless than I was at the time. My mom was bawling, and my dad, he was leaving. And, you know, that moment is etched into my memory, like a tattoo on my soul. And my family was never, ever, ever again together. You know, my parents, it was not an amicable split. It was very hostile, and it continued to be hostile. And to this day, you know, my parents, I mean, I don't want to speak for them, but I there's no love between them. And that's been a pain that I've never been able to heal, that disconnect in my own family and the people I love most. And it's funny, because my whole life, it's been about connecting people, being a great connector, wanting to bring people together in all kinds of capacities. And I get to do that through my work, helping people create connection, particularly where disconnection is the norm. And so I didn't even realize that, Anna, till maybe a couple years ago. You know, I'd already been doing this work. But as I continue doing my own therapy and my own coaching work, you know, I discover more of myself on a deeper and deeper level. And it was a great epiphany to me. And of course, in my own relationship, because, you know, there are things that in my own relationship that hurt. And I realize some of my triggers in my relationship with my fiance are when, oh, I don't know, it has nothing to do with her. But when I, let's say when she doesn't want to do something with people that I want to do something with, And she's right to not want to do it for whatever reason. Like, she's totally right. Like, these people are assholes or something. I don't know. But there's a part of me that's like, oh, but we have to connect. Let's create connection. I want to. It's insane. But, you know, that's a wound that I carry with me from that childhood split. And so, you know, I've become as a life coach, I help people connect to themselves. And as a relationship coach, I help people in relationship really connect to each other.
Yeah.
So it's amazing, you know, to just sit with that and think about that. It's like, it goes core to my being.
Wow.
Why I do this work.
So just to mention, so that the context is clear for the listeners. So you were my first life coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so privileged to have worked with you, and I can really tell all of you listening that Brian is the real deal. And you helped me to connect with my, you know, inner being and my inner voice and my excitement, which also led me to starting this business. But it's just so powerful for me to hear how you have been able to, you know, create connection. And this is another thing, like, you teach about the masculine and the feminine, and the masculine objective is always freedom, right? Whereas the feminine objective is connection. And for me, you are such an amazing role model to be a conscious, awakened man, you know, who wants other men to handle and thrive through connection, right?
Yeah, thank you for that acknowledgement. And, you know, the great battle that always seems to play out in relationships is this primal clash between freedom and connection. And, you know, and it's not always the man who stands for freedom. You know, in a same-sex relationship, it could be their partner. In a heterosexual relationship, it could be the woman who's standing for freedom. But usually one partner tends to be more loyal to freedom, and the other partner is more loyal to connection. It's never framed that way. It's usually framed like, you know, don't tell me what to do, or you know, you're making shit up, you know, your feelings don't matter. You know, that's a lot of times how these things sound. And, you know, what I'm still on the journey of discovering for myself personally what I know to be true, but what I'm still learning in my body to experience is that the ultimate freedom is found in the deepest connection.
Whoa.
Yeah. I'll say it again, that the ultimate freedom is found in the deepest connection.
Wow. Really, and let that sink in. Yeah, that's huge.
And it's a spiritual journey, relationships. It's a spiritual journey, but it's a human journey at the same time. I mean, it's connection and freedom all wrapped up in one. But, you know, most of us, and myself included, you know, on the surface, it just looks like, oh my God, you know, for men, particularly generally for men, it's like, well, if I'm going to do a relationship, then I'm going to lose my freedom. I don't want to lose my freedom, you know, whereas rather than man, you know, more masculine person, a more feminine person might think, oh, goody, relationship, connection. But then she'll be, or he will be disappointed when that connection doesn't quite live up to what I thought it was going to be. Or, you know,
they don't football all the time.
Exactly. Or he's in the room or she, but I don't feel him. Like, where'd he go? You know, or she's in the room, but, you know, she's on her phone. What the fuck? You know, where'd she go? Whatever. So it's fun. It's challenging work, but it's a lot of fun to do. I really enjoy it, you know, and obviously, you know, I'm 4 years into my relationship with my lovely lady, Sylvie, whom I know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel deeply blessed to do this work.
Mm. Yeah,
it's
amazing. I can just say that you guys need to check Brian out later. But so obviously, I want to talk to you about how relationship, like for entrepreneurs, how relationships can cause stress, you know. And so the first question I would like to ask you is, because I hear this a lot from my community and from my clients, you know, that how do you handle if you've started a business, but your partner is not really on board?
Ah, if your partner's, like, your partner's not supportive of doing the business?
Yeah, because that's really stressful, speaking of stress for entrepreneurs.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's really tough. I mean, you know, relationships, we want to feel supported by our partners. We need to feel, not just want, we need to feel supported by our partners, or that is going to be a major source of stress. I guess the first thing that comes to me is, now I'm going to make the assumption that in general, this is a supportive relationship. Because there are relationships where your partner's never supportive. And in that case, never mind the business, get the hell out of that relationship. Or go see a therapist, hire a coach, somebody to help you navigate that. Because that is not a workable, that is not a working relationship. That is not a healthy relationship.
Mm.
So just presuming though that in general it is a supportive relationship and you're starting a business and your partner's not on board, what the first thing that comes to me is that your partner's probably afraid. They're afraid of something. And what I would encourage a couple to do is to really understand what those fears are but to be really mindful about that because this is where, again, getting support can be really helpful because most of us don't have the skills to have these kinds of conversations in ways that create connection. Usually we have these kinds of conversations in ways that just create animosity and adversarial, you know, just make war basically, you know. Well, I'm afraid you're going to spend all our money. You're going to waste all our money. You're going to fail. It's not going to work. And that's really hard to hear. And it's not helpful to hear that way. It's not helpful to be spoken that way. It's very accusatory. It feels like, you know, if I'm a man, I'm hearing that from my partner. She may have a legitimate fear, but if she's voicing it in that way, what I'm going to hear is you don't trust me. You don't support me. You don't believe in me. Notice just, you know, we're off to what I call crazy town immediately. So, you know, having that kind of conversation about, well, what are you really afraid of? It's not that, you know, my partner, just as an example, you're not afraid that I'm going to fail. What you're afraid of is you're afraid of not having money. Okay. You're afraid of maybe me spending less time with you. Okay. You're afraid of, maybe you're even afraid this will be successful and it'll take me away from you. I mean, there's all kinds of fears there that it helps to just really get to the core of and really own so that they're not just projected stories, right? That's the first work that I would want a couple to do if one is not feeling supported in a business venture. You know, really get to the core of the fear that's at play here. Because once you've been able to identify, well, what are you really afraid of? You're not afraid I'm going to fail. You're afraid you're going to be alone, or you're afraid you're going to not be able to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what your fear is. Okay. That has nothing to do with whether or not I fail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. But so now we can begin to really partner in that fear. Like, I know what it's like to be afraid I won't be able to pay the bills. I know what it's like to be afraid that my partner isn't going to be able to spend time with me. Now we can begin to address the core fears. You know, like I might say to my partner, once I know what her real fears are, not just the projected stories about my capabilities or my trustworthiness. So I'm not defensive anymore. Now I'm really with her fear. Okay, it's like, hey, look, I get it. Those are legit fears, and I just want you to know that I'm never going to put our family at risk financially. I'm only going to invest. You know, we're always going to be able to pay the bills. It's blah blah blah. Whatever the details are, but I can then just begin to reassure her. And I understand, you know, being an entrepreneur, it takes a lot of time. But every week, I promise you, we're going to do a date night. You know, we're going to spend at least, we're going to have a good, you know, or every day, I'm going to shut off the work at 8 o'clock, and then you and I are just going to, you know, we'll go for a walk, and you know, we'll have some daily connection ritual so we don't lose touch. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. So, is that helpful?
That is. You think, Anna? I think that's so good, because I think what you said about how we often get caught up in crazy town, you know, we get stuck there because we're like, both are so defensive. One is so mm-hmm. scared, and the other one gets defensive, and then we get lost, you know. So I think that's so helpful to really have that deep conversation, and where we really try to understand that our partner is feeling scared, as you said.
Yeah, they're feeling some threat. I mean, that's when the only reason they wouldn't support you is because they feel threatened by whatever it is you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the threat is almost certainly imagined.
Yeah.
But telling them it's imagined or it's made up or don't worry, without really reassuring them that they're or being, like you said, being defensive. Which, mm-hmm. if my partner communicates that she doesn't trust me, I'm going to get defensive. That's hurtful. But if she shares with me just that she's feeling scared, okay. Well, what she's doing now is she's inviting me to care about her by just staying in her experience.
Yeah, she's being vulnerable.
Exactly. There you go. She's being vulnerable. She's not being accusatory. She's being vulnerable.
Mm.
And that's where partnership, that's where connection really happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So also you who listen, who are, you know, women, same thing for us, right? We sometimes need to lead the conversation with being vulnerable. Like, are you feeling uncertain about this, scared, or, you know, like seeing past the accusations, or, you know.
Yeah. And you might need to, again, because a lot of times men and women both, but, you know, speaking as a man, I'm just thinking now, you know, a lot of women are starting businesses, and it could make their husbands or their boyfriends or their female partners uncomfortable and not want to be supportive. And a lot of times, I'll just speak for men, we, especially if we haven't done a lot of kind of our own inner growth work or inner awareness work, we'll make up reasons that aren't true why we're afraid. You know, we won't own our vulnerability, and we'll kind of keep it in, well, I'm just afraid you're going to exhaust yourself.
Yeah.
I don't want you to exhaust yourself. So, you know, I'm not really keen on what you're planning to do. It's probably not going to work anyway. You know, the market is so crowded. There's so many people doing this already. I mean, you know, you don't have a platform. It's terrible. It's terrible how good I am at being critical in this moment. But it's, you know, I, particularly men, women too, but the male brain especially is really good at identifying where the obstacles are.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, though, that often comes out as a lack of support.
Mm-hmm.
And it often feels like criticism, and it often feels like negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And it is those things often. And so it can be a real challenge getting to the root of what's frightening your partner, because, you know, especially for men, you know, men, the thought of their partner maybe being more successful than they are can still be, even in this modern day and age, it can still be very threatening to a lot of men. Threaten their sense of status. They're even, and this is kind of this can be a shocking one, it can threaten their how do I say this? Their need to be needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if she goes off and creates all this success and then she doesn't need me, well, she might leave me.
Mm-hmm.
What good am I? Right. And very few men will be able to identify that.
So true. You're really hitting at the core issues here. And also, I really resonate with this, because this is the case with my husband, you know, that he was really scared when I started my business, because no one in his family has, you know, had a business, and especially a one. It was just really way out there, you know, and we had to do a lot of this work that you described, you know, to really dig deep into what is it that you're afraid of, and you know, how can we create safety so that you feel
yeah.
and I can be free as well in this.
Yeah, that's really the dance. How can I feel free and supported to do the work that I'm called to do while simultaneously doing it in ways that where you feel safe and seen and prioritized still. You know, and that's not an easy dance to do for a couple. That can be really challenging. And you know, Sylvie and I, we've had some very real challenges around that in our 4 years together. And we've had a lot of support because there have been times that both of us have been like, are you fucking kidding me? This does, we can't do this. This feels cruel to keep going, to be putting each other through this, you know, but it's neither one of us are cruel. We're both deeply, deeply generous and warm-hearted and kind souls. But those primal fears, the freedom versus connection, you know, they're real. And also, you know, the childhood wounding stuff, like my parents leaving when I was 4. Look, it's the best thing that ever happened. If my parents had stayed together, I'd be a neurotic mess. They were a disaster as a couple. But still, just the same, living with that perpetual disconnect with the people I love most is, you know, it's a pain I live with. It's a trigger that's always present for me. And being aware of these things, getting awareness around these things helps immensely in navigating these challenges of, you know, when you're entrepreneurs and, I mean, even when you're not. These challenges are still present. I think it's just compounded when you own your own business and you're starting your own business. Yeah. So don't be afraid to get support is the point.
Mm-hmm. Amen. So can I ask you a bit about, because like you are a really successful entrepreneur, you know, and Sylvie is too, and therapist. So how have you experienced stress as an entrepreneur?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the biggest stressors that I've found is I never know when my day is over. I never, because my work is never done. And, you know, I've worked in the corporate world. I was in the military in the past. I have experience working where I go to an office. I work the hours I'm asked to work, maybe a few extra here and there. And then I go home and it's done. And I get paid no matter the quality. I mean, obviously, you know, the quality of my work matters. But generally speaking, you know, I show up and do my work and get paid. As an entrepreneur, that's not how it works. In fact, as an entrepreneur for a long ass time, I show up and I don't get paid, no matter how long I work. And there's always something more to do, and no one else is going to do it. I'm the one that's got to do it, or I'm the one that has to make sure it gets done, even if I'm hiring people to do it. So my biggest stress has been that, not knowing when my day is over. And I actually came up with a practice maybe 6 years ago to help me with that, because I noticed I would get to the end of my day and I would have worked all day long doing all kinds of things, Anna, and I had no idea what I got done that day. I had no sense of accomplishment. There was still no income coming in. Like I couldn't see the direct results of my work. Does this sound familiar? You ever experienced
this?
Yeah. And it's like, I still don't feel complete with the work. Oh my God, it's a terrible way to live your life, right? That's an everyday, it's just like, when is this going to end? So that has been one of the biggest consistent stressors. And I came up with a practice that I call my daily wins. Did you and I work with this when we were working together?
I don't think so. Tell me.
Oh, man. Well, so my daily wins practice is, I hate to-do lists. To-do lists are just, you know, they're just these unending, ongoing task sheets that never get completed. I can't separate the important from the unnecessary. And so this daily wins practice, what it does is it helps me identify 4 things that I'm going to do today. And they're 4 things that meet 3 criteria. The first criteria is that these are 4 things that I can finish today. I can get them done today. That's one criteria. The other criteria is they will advance one of my passion projects, whether it's if I'm writing a book, whether it's I'm working on my health, whether it's my coaching practice, whether it's my blogging. That's the second criteria, though. They're really meaningful. They advance one of my passion projects. And here's the third criteria, and maybe the most important. I know that if I finish even half of these, even two out of these four tasks, by the end of today, I will feel amazing. I'll feel like, okay, I won the day. You know, and there's a reason it's only four, because I can't, more than four, and now it's a to-do list. And also, when I've completed even two out of these four, you know, if it's 7 o'clock at night and I'm halfway there, I'm done. And I feel great. I mean, imagine just doing one thing every day that's meaningful, deeply meaningful, and advances a passion project, and you know if you complete it, you'll feel great by the end of the day. If you did one thing every day, that would be life-changing. You know, here's an opportunity. I'm a bit of an overachiever, so I chose four, you know, but they're not major things, because if they're major things, I probably can't get them done today. You know, when I was writing my book, one of my daily wins would often be write one chapter or edit one chapter. You know, I could do that in a couple hours, and then I still have time for another win, right? But if I didn't have that as a win, it was just too easy to, well, I'll just do emails, or I'll maybe do some social media marketing, or I'll...
The busy work.
That's the thing. I don't even fucking know what I'm doing when I do busy work. And there's so much of it to be done. It's weird. So that practice has really helped me. And I still do that. I still identify usually no more than four significant things that I'm going to get done today. Because when I've done them, also, you know, my day's done. I know when my day is done. And I feel good in the turning off the computer, in the, you know, it's like, okay, I'm good. There's so much more to do. I have a place where I dump all of my tasks that I want to get done, but some of them I won't do for 6 months or ever. And that's okay, because today I'm only doing the 2 to 4 things that I know are going to really make me feel good. And if there's something on my to-do list that isn't going to make me feel good, I'm never going to do it. And I'm okay with that. Or I'm going to hand it off to someone else to do.
I really love this, because this sounds like a great way to deal with overwhelm, you know, because there's always more.
Always.
Yeah.
It's endless.
Yeah. And I was taught this even as a teacher, you know, when I worked by my older, wiser colleagues. They were like, Anna, you're never going to be done. Like, just go home.
Yeah. Right. You're never going to be done. That's another major stress, I think, for entrepreneurs, certainly has been for me, is when am I successful? When am I going to be successful enough to relax? And I've found that the answer is never. You know, coming off just even this month, I'm having one of my best months ever. You know, this is one of my top three all-time months in terms of income.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But it's really hard to feel it, to feel the success, to feel why, because I know, well, okay, that's great. Okay, this month is great, but I still don't know what's going to happen next month. You know, as an entrepreneur, that's the thing. Nobody is guaranteeing me a paycheck next month. And that can be stressful. It can be, again, another kind of never ending worry if I allow it to be, you know, and I'm aware of this in me. I'm aware that, you know, in fact, in my men's group last night, because I was just sharing just with my men, you know, this exact stress, this exact challenge that I kind of never feel successful enough. And there's a lot of intricate, even tragically beautiful reasons for that, but those aren't relevant right now. But I was sharing that with them, and one of the guys asked me, Brian, what would success look like for you? What's your definition? What would it look like? And I said, you know, I can't even answer that question, because I'm already aware what I'm experiencing today, 2 years ago, is what success looked like to me. And I'm living it. I mean, big time. And, you know, 5 years ago, I couldn't have dreamed. This was a distant fantasy. And here I am today. And honestly, the target is moved. So I can't answer that question with any, you know, integrity, because I know I'd be lying to you. So, and this is sort of the cross that I particularly bear. You know, this is a challenge for me. It's a practice that goes on, and I think as entrepreneurs too, a practice that I would encourage every entrepreneur to really take on, and I'm talking to myself right now, Anna, is gratitude and appreciation for what even tiny signs of success there may be. You know, you put out some content, you do a post on Instagram that you feel good about. If you get 2 likes, be grateful for those 2 stupid little likes. You know, somebody at least looked at your photo and thought, I like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's got to start there, because otherwise, if you're not satisfied with those 2 likes, you're not going to be satisfied with only making $20,000 in a month. Yeah. It's only 20 grand. I mean, there's, you know, I got friends making 100 grand in a month. Why am I not making 100 grand in a month? Like, that's kind of where the mind goes. It's right now it's only 2 likes. Well, one day it's only going to be $20,000. So it's like cultivating that practice of appreciation and gratitude for even the little signs that, you know, the world is responding to your work is so important, because otherwise it's just so easy to overlook what's working, even when a lot. I have a friend who told me recently, he's got 500,000 followers on Instagram. He's got 3 million people following him on YouTube. And he was sharing with me, you know, man, he was like, I had a day of envy today because, you know, how come I don't have 3 million people on Instagram and 20 million people on YouTube? And I'm like, man, shut the fuck up, man. Just shut up. Just shut up. You know, that's insane, right? And he's like, of course I know it's insane. And that's what I mean. It's like, it's a moving target. And unless you're Kim Kardashian and you have all the followers in the world, and even Kim is still surely living in some kind of stress, like afraid that someone else is going to become Kim Kardashian if she doesn't keep being Kim Kardashian. And it's like, it's endless. It's just endless.
So how do you feel gratitude every day? Do you do it every day, or how do you make sure to do that?
So
it's easy to say.
Well, there's 2 ways. One is I will journal in the morning. I'll do, you know, in my one of my morning practices is to sit and just 5 minutes. I'll just journal a list of things I'm really grateful for that happened yesterday, for example. And that's actually scientifically shown, research-based shown, to improve your mood immediately. Yeah. Just because your brain is replaying things that you enjoyed the first time they happened, and now you're getting to enjoy them again in the moment, even though they're not happening, but your brain doesn't know the difference so much. So that's one practice. And the other practice is, and this is harder for me, which is why it makes it such an important practice, is, you know, I get a message from someone who wants to work with me. I'll just look at the message and say, thank you. And actually my assistant writes back to most people, but I'll just look at the message coming in, or, you know, even during this interview, and I got a notification that someone paid $67 for my boundaries program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, normally what sort of my default is, it's only $67, you know, just send it away. You know, what is that in me? It's only Jesus.
Man in you.
What is that? It's this cynical, resource guarding man in me.
I think it's the mammal brain, you know, because the mammal brain is always scurrying for more, you know, looking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's the hoarding. It's the, you know, the famine is coming. Yes. We need to store all that we can. Only $67. I can't pay my rent with that. It's ridiculous. It's an insanity. And so, but my practice is rather than that is, oh, thank you. Just that simple little twist. Thank you. You know, that's one that I'm really still in process of, because it's, as an entrepreneur, there's so many things to pay attention to. There's so many, especially where I'm at in my business. There's so many moving parts, and, you know, dozens of messages coming in every day just to want to work with me. Never mind all of the comments on posts and all of the people just writing in to say thank you and all of that. It's like, I've dreamed about this, and it has an overwhelming quality to it as well. So it's really important, you know, and right now Sylvie and I, because of what we're experiencing, both of us, you know, we've decided this summer we're going to take a week off each month, an entire week off every month this summer, and we need it, you know. That overwhelm is real. And even when, you know, especially when things are going really well, again, we think, wow, well, things are going really well. That means I can relax. No, it doesn't. I mean, it does. But look, you can relax whenever you want. But what really actually happens is when things are going really well, there's a lot more parts to deal with. There's a lot more energy to work with, mm-hmm. whether from clients that are reaching, potential clients that are reaching out, or just the momentum of, you know, doing your social media posts to keep the momentum going, or creating a new product for all the demands that's coming in. Mm-hmm. It's like when things get better, you have more work to do. So, you know, it's funny, Sylvie recently hired 2 people. I only have 1 assistant. She already has 2. And in a way, it's created more work for her.
Oh.
And they've relieved a lot of work for her. But now there's the whole task of managing, of making sure things get done. And also now it frees her up to do more of the work she really wanted to do. But now she is doing more of the work she wants to do. More work. So while still managing, we really need to build in, as entrepreneurs, we really need to be mindful that before the money starts to pour in, before the clients start to pour in, it's really helpful to put in place these little practices, the gratitude practices, the daily wins practices, so that when the money does start coming and the clients do start coming, And it will, if you're consistent and showing up every day. It might take some time, but it will. But if you have these practices in place, then when the overwhelm begins to happen, you know, like Sylvie and I, we both have been really plugged into the importance of self-care for a long time. And because of that, we can recognize when we're starting to hit our wall, and we can both say, you know what, we need to take a week off.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of resistance. If we didn't have these practices built in, we'd both be saying, no, we can't take a week off. We have all this work to do. We have to keep going. And we'd run ourselves into the ground.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned this, you know, because especially also as a male entrepreneur, you know, self-care is not well looked upon, right? And also, like,
yeah.
I'm so happy that you guys have the awareness about the importance of self-care, because those are, like, a lot of my clients, you know, they come from a place where they have always been high achievers and they have never had any chance to practice.
Yeah.
And then they are successful now. And, you know, it's just the place where you describe, you know, that they're having this momentum, but they don't know how to relax.
Yeah.
They don't know how to take care of themselves. So they get, you know, they feel antsy, or they feel guilty if they take care of themselves, you know, because they worry about other people.
Or many I find also will use alcohol, for example, to relax, you know, because alcohol will shift your energy really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, you get off work and just, you know, go grab some beers or some whiskey or whatever it is. And
Mm-hmm. Or over exercising. That is very common high achieve and men.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's right. Using exercise to so-called relax.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it catches up. Even if it doesn't catch up physically in your body, even if that's not where it first reveals itself, it'll often reveal itself in disconnect in your relationship.
Oh, I love this. Okay. So that's one of the symptoms.
Absolutely. It will reveal itself in disconnect in your relationship, because if you're not, you know, relationship is the domain of feminine, of, you know, we connect in intimacy through feminine energy.
Mm.
And being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, being that's all that majority of our time is spent in our masculine energy in when we do business, when we're doing our business. And if we're using artificial means to transition out of that, like you said, over exercising, which really is just us still in our masculine.
Yes.
Or drugs or alcohol to kind of take the edge off, which is a kind of an artificial feminine shift, if you will. We're not creating authentic connection in with our partners. We might exist alongside each other, but we're not connecting. And I actually work with a lot of couples or particularly men who just lost their relationship because they weren't couples or men and women also, but they weren't tending to the feminine connection aspect of their relationship. So couples that have a lot of money, you know, I'm working with a couple who has an international business, multi-million-dollar international business, and they both work on the business. They have everything that most couples think that you should want, but they haven't felt connected in years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's like the metaphor I use is, okay, so you have a castle, you have a really wonderfully built castle, but there's no fire in the hearth. There's no life in the castle. What good is your castle? And this, you know, connection is about the fire in the castle. And if we don't know how to tend to the connection, the fire in the castle, well, eventually no one's going to want to live in the castle. It's not going to be a very warm place. And so again, as entrepreneurs, it really does start with self-care, with prioritizing relationship and connection to self, authentic connection to self, doing the things that are nurturing beyond just running the business. And, you know, when we love our work, it's challenging. You know, I love my work. It's like, I love writing. I love coaching. I love sharing wisdom, and I love it. I'm thrilled I get paid for it. And though I need to stop.
Yeah.
At a certain time every day and be non-productive and connect with my lady and do things that have nothing to do with my work projects.
Yeah. And I love that you say that, because people think that you burn out because you're doing boring or, you know, not good things, but you can burn out, and most people burn out because of exciting things.
Totally. Yeah. You can burn. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You burn out because you're
doing and too little relaxing or restoring.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you said it. I don't need to add anything to that. It's true. It does. You can burn out no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. Can I ask you though, Brian, would you say that you've experienced burnout or close to burnout ever?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm getting there now. Not in this conversation. I'm having a delightful time with you in this conversation. But I mean, I tend to hit a wall. I've noticed I tend to hit a wall around May or June every year. And, you know, last year at this time, I went to Ireland for 3 weeks to just be alone. You may remember we were working with each other at the time. Yeah, I need to give myself time away about 5 months into the year, every year, otherwise. And I didn't do that this year. And I'm definitely overstretching myself. And Sylvia and I, we have a joke that we know it's time to take a break, to take a little vacation and this is just a joke, but when we're in session with a client and we're thinking after 10 minutes, okay, I think we're complete now. I think we're complete. We're 10 minutes into a session and we're ready to be over. We're done. They're like, I think I'm hitting my wall. I think it's time. I need a break because I'm not sure I'm really serving my clients anymore.
And
you know?
for those of you listening, Brian goes for 2 hours.
That's right.
90 minutes to 2 hours. So this is really.
That's right. I show up. I'm all in. I like to let our sessions breathe and to really allow the depth of wisdom to come through in our sessions. And it takes a lot of energy to be present, and which makes it even more important that I give myself rest and breaks and I take time off, because if I'm starting to resent the work I love, I'm not being of service to anybody. And so, you know, I didn't give myself that break this year, which is why Sylvia and I are on Friday, we're taking a full week off. And I'm also going to Norway though, in the middle of June for a men's retreat. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
Oh man. Oh, you might have gotten accidentally deleted from my email list, and I had a snafu on my email list.
Yeah.
But in any case, going to Norway for a week for a men's retreat. If you're listening to this, and this, I don't know when you're going to put this out, but that's okay. It's you can find out about it at brianreeves.com/Norway. Brian with a Y, reeves.com/Norway. But I'm going to this amazing men's retreat in the land of the Vikings. And again, that's an act of great self-care for me. And that is of vital importance, because I will burn out. And every year, it's not something that I figured out how to deal with a long time ago and it never happens again. No, I push myself. And so it's of vital importance that I recognize the signs. And when I start to, you know, celebrate that a client postpones a session, or, you know, celebrate that someone doesn't show up for a call. Oh man, that's a bad sign. Like, okay, wait a second. Something's going on here. You know, I think you need a break, Reeves.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, it's a self-awareness. We got to know our own bodies, you know, we got to know our own bodies and be able to respond and give them the love and care that they need.
Mm-hmm. Have you learned how to relax?
Here's how I would answer that. I know the conditions that I require to relax. That's how I know the conditions within which I can relax and the conditions within which it's really hard for me to relax. So it's more about creating the conditions. And for me, the conditions are I have to remove responsibility from my plate in order for me to relax, which means either, you know, fully handing everything over to my assistant for a few days, or, you know, for example, I just to give you a simple example, you know, driving. I drive 95% of the time with Sylvia and I. Sometimes she'll drive. She wants to drive. And I'll sit in the passenger seat and she'll tell me, okay, Brian, I got this. I'll drive. You relax. But my mind is still, wait, but I'm on the hook. I got to make sure we get fast where we're going. I got to, you know, watch out here. So I can't really relax there. Mm-hmm. It's not a condition within which I can relax. Mm-hmm. My mind still is on the hook for, but wait, I want to make sure that we're safe. I want to, you know, I got to pay attention. Is she taking the best route? All those stupid male
you're
things.
Just like my dad. I'm sorry to say this, but he's just like...
That's funny. So that's not really a condition within which I can relax. But I know that if we go to, like, for example, if we go to one of my friend's homes and work is off the table, you know, we're done with work. We're not in work conversations and we're in his living room and we're just having dinner. I know that that's a condition within which I easily relax. I'm great at relaxing when I've created the conditions within which I know I can relax. I'm terrible, Anna, terrible at relaxing when the conditions are such that I don't naturally relax. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for sharing that. Can I ask also, like, is it, because I know this is, you do work from home, do you?
I do. Yeah. Predominantly, yes.
Mm. So do you find it easy to relax at home?
It's easier now that, you know, for the last couple of years, I've had a home office. So when I'm done working, I can just leave the office and come into the living room or come out. Like right now, I'm in my backyard. You probably heard the birds chirping the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a place I generally do work. And I don't really consider this, again, having this conversation with you doesn't feel like work, you know, which is, by the way, is another thing. When I'm starting to hit my burnout, I have to say no to a lot of things that I normally would say yes to. But I knew this would be fun. I knew this would be enjoyable to have this conversation with you. So, you know, one thing that we didn't really talk about, we touched on it lightly at the beginning, but it's this idea of containers. And that's even what I just said about the conditions within which I can relax or not relax. It's really about the container. And for me, I'm very sensitive to space where I'm at. Sylvie and I, we will not have business. We both do similar work and we share some overlap in our work, and we will not have business conversations in the bedroom, because the bedroom is a place for relaxing, for connecting, you know, for making love and resting. It's not a place to talk business. That's a container for relaxation. I forgot your question.
Yeah. How do you relax at home? Like, where can you relax?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So, you know, there are certain, like our living room and kitchen area, that again is, that's the place within which we relax. That's not the business place, you know, and it's a little different for Sylvie. She seems to be a little less sensitive to space in that way. She can relax where she does her work, but it's harder for me. My brain really needs the physical separation. So I'll tell you, I definitely prefer to work away from the home. I really prefer to have a big separation, physical separation between work and home. But I don't have that now. And so it is a little bit more challenging for me to relax. But creating those separations in those different containers in the home definitely helps. You know, once I leave my office, when I'm done with my work, it's much easier for me to just know, okay, I'm in the living room, in the kitchen now. I'm relaxing. I'm just hanging out. I'm not doing work anymore. So it helps, but it's not perfect for me.
Yeah. Would you, like in the dream scenario, would you like to learn how to kind of switch off, you know, regardless of the condition?
I think, yeah, my ultimate spiritual practice is no matter what I'm engaged in, is to be relaxed in it.
Beautiful. I'm asking that because a lot of really successful people or high achievers, they are scared of relaxing. So they will, some of them will say no, like they're going to be lazy, you know, and saying that really shows, you know, what a guru you are to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think we do our best work when we're relaxed, ironically, not when we're stressed and in tension. I think we do our best work when we are relaxed in the doing of it. So yeah, that's an ongoing practice for me to relax even in my efforting.
Okay. So is there anything that you want to say before we wind this up?
No, I think I just want to acknowledge you. I think this has been a very fruitful and interesting discussion. And I hope that this serves the people who listen to it. And I think you've done a great job at holding this conversation, Anna. And again, I just want to congratulate you on having this podcast and moving forward with your work.
Thank you so much, Brian. And I want to say thank you so much because as you mentioned, like, I know how busy you are. So taking the time for this is really something I appreciate greatly.
My pleasure.
You have a gift for the listeners.
I do. Remind me what my gift is. What did I tell you my gift is? Oh, yeah. Okay, thanks. Okay, thanks. Different gifts for different scenarios. You know, this is what I mean. So many moving parts as an entrepreneur. So, yes, I created these short videos, these 2 to 3 minute videos with these really high impact snippets about to create better understanding between you and your partner, whether you're single and just want to learn more about, well, what the hell, you know, was that past relationship? What was that all about? What the hell is going on there? Or you're in a relationship and you want to have a little more understanding with your partner. I created these seven short videos to help you understand and beat jealousy, to help you connect with your authentic, sexy self, and just, again, better understand your partner. So that's my free gift to you. And I think, Anna, you'll put a link somewhere.
Yes, in below, in the description.
In the description of the episode.
Yeah. Make sure to really listen through those because they are such nuggets of wisdom.
They're not long. They're short videos, but you'll be surprised. You've never heard jealousy framed quite like this. Yeah, for example, that's just one of the 7 videos.
Ah, I love this. Thank you so much, Brian. And
my pleasure, Anna.
all the best this summer and with the vacations and really taking time off.
Thank you so much. All the best to you as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, please leave a review. Make sure to download Brian's 7 free videos to better understand love and intimacy. You find them in the description below. Also, go follow Brian on social to get all his latest epicness. By the way, I have to say that my husband did go to the Viking retreat that Brian mentioned that he facilitated this last summer, and it was amazing. I really encourage you to introduce your partner, brother, or just male friends to Brian's powerful men's work. He is a true trailblazer. Have a magical day.